In June of 1977, 8-year-old Renee Freer was brutally murdered in her home in Monroe. And for many, many decades, it kind of felt like there was really nowhere to go with the case. But then there was sort of some renewed effort into it again. Well over a year ago, in early 2024, there was a local author who started kind of asking questions online, ended up actually publishing a book. And Monroe police kind of credited him with bringing more energy to the case and more attention to it. So that combined with kind of advancements in police technology, they believe they found the person responsible. But we learned this week from Monroe police, the case is closed. They believe it was a 14-year-old, a boy under the age of 14, excuse me, who killed Renee Freer many, many, many years ago. But back in July, police submitted a juvenile arrest warrant to the state's attorney's office charging a suspect with first-degree manslaughter. But last month, they say prosecutors told police they would not approve the warrant due to the statute of limitations on manslaughter and the age of the suspect at the time of the killing. I have to understand this better because I'm feeling like more and more cold cases are being solved decades later because of things like what we talked about, police, technology advancements, things like that. But this was, to me, very bizarre and just sort of a nope, sorry, it's over, like full stop. So for that, we go to our legal expert on the show, attorney Bill Bloss, who has nothing to do with the case, but gives us these types of, you know, just insight and perspective to understand these cases a lot better. I'm really confused by this one, Bill. I got to be honest.
Well, it is complicated, and it's partly complicated because the law at the time in 1977 is what's going to control any possible prosecution. And at the time, a child under the age of 14 legally could not be charged with murder. That was in the statute. And so a murder charge, when murder doesn't have a statute of limitations, a murder charge could not be sustained against somebody under 14. So the police went to the second alternative, which is to charge with manslaughter. Now, assuming that there could have been a murder charge, by the way, I'm just assuming that for the question. So the police go to the second alternative, and that's first-degree manslaughter. And first-degree manslaughter had and still has a 5-year statute of limitations. And so the first-degree manslaughter would have had to have been charged by 1982. And at the time, the police didn't have the evidence to get a warrant for first-degree manslaughter in 1982. So it's an example of somewhere where the law didn't anticipate the changes in technology that have happened over the next 50 years.
Well, then, so this sounds really rude, but I'm going to ask it. Then why even bother? Well, I mean, again, they never closed the case technically, so that's fine. But, I mean, Monroe police, without saying it directly, basically said they had, you know, kind of a renewed interest in the case without saying that they haven't been investigating it actively. I mean, that to me, why even bother? I mean, why wouldn't they be told right out of the gate by the state's attorney's office, look, if this is a kid who's underage and is a juvenile at the time, don't bother even continuing with this effort, or if this was the law in 1977 and we've gone past where you can even file something, don't bother. I mean, I just don't know why they'd even pursue it. Why not close the case then in 1982?
Well, I guess there are a couple of answers to that. One is that did they know in 1982 that the suspect, the only suspect, was under 14. I don't know the answer to that. And I don't know what conversations the Monroe police had with the state's attorney's office in 1982. But, it could be that the police were not able to confirm that the suspect was under 14 until much later. At least according to media reports, there were a couple of alternatives. There were a couple of suspects at the time, and their actual ages are not described in the media reports I've seen. So that's one answer, that maybe the person who they developed the case against was over 14. But the second is that I think the family has a right to have the police, the family of the victim has a right to have the police do a full investigation and try to provide some closure. And I think in that respect, what the Monroe Police Department did, I'm speaking not as a member of the family of the victim, but I can speculate that it brings them some closure, and they at least know that the police and the state's attorney did everything that could legally be done to bring the perpetrator to justice.
So again, we've got Bill Bloss here, who's an attorney. He's our legal expert on the show and doesn't have a connection to this case, but is giving us insight because it is just sort of the worst kind of news with a case like this. You know, I feel bad. I feel bad for the people who live in Monroe, the family, the Freer family, who I think kind of had this renewed hope last year. And to just be told, you know, hey, actually, there's literally nothing we can do, even if we found the guy. I mean, that might be the worst part of all, is that they think they know who it is. They feel real confident that they know who this is. So that we are probably never even going to know the name of this person, right? Like, they can't release the name.
Correct. You know, the police have, at least the police feel that they had enough probable cause to submit an arrest warrant application to the state's attorney. So, I mean, that's a pretty, that's a pretty serious step, obviously. And so they've got to have some degree of confidence that they've got the right person. But yeah, you're right. We're not going to find out who it is, at least, you know, not through any public means. Is somebody going to leak it someday? Maybe, but they shouldn't. They're not supposed to. There is somebody. And I understand this is frustrating to know that there is somebody out there walking around who took the life of a young girl in 1977. Now, maybe he's locked up today. We don't know. Maybe he's president of a company. We don't know.
Right.
And that is a little bit scary, and it's a little bit frustrating. I get that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, though, it kind of leads to this question, Bill, because sometimes, you know, you wonder, is this really rare or is it something common? Like I said in the beginning, I feel like a lot of cold cases have kind of ended up having solutions or resolutions, rather, decades later because of advanced technology. Does it seem like this is sort of more of a rare case that, you know, you've got the combination of how young the suspect was at the time of the murder combined with state laws on the books in 1977? I mean, is that sort of a rare combo that we would see? Because like I said, I just feel like in the news industry across the country, cold cases are being resolved decades later. And people who look like they might have been teenagers at the time or very young people, they're now doing time in their, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s even for a crime they did decades ago.
Well, I mean, of course, it's pretty unusual still, thankfully, that you have somebody under 14 committing a homicide. I mean, that is not an everyday occurrence.
True. Good point.
Obviously. And so, you know, I think it's fair to say that it is a little bit on it's an unusual situation for society as a whole. Unfortunately for the family of the victim, it's what happened. And so I can certainly understand their frustration, and I can understand, you know, any uncertainty and confusion it raises. But it's just a combination of the age of the perpetrator and the laws on the books at the time. I mean, it's unfortunate, I guess. For sure, it's unfortunate, but it is what the law requires.
Yeah, I think it's crazy. So at this point, just to make sure I'm clear, Attorney Bloss, there's no way that unless somebody were to leak it, which again, police, like, I mean, if somebody were to leak it, they would get into, I would think, legal trouble. We'll never know who Rene Freer's killer is. Like, that's it. That's the end of the story. There's no way to override this or ask the state's attorney. Like, they can't break a law that was in place in 1977. You can't override this.
Well, there's no legal way to find out. Now, you know, it could be that somebody, when I say it could be leaked, I mean, there's more than one person who knows who the warrant was submitted for. I mean, it's not only the police, it's the state's attorney, but they're also, it's not implausible that family members of the suspect are aware that he was targeted or was, you know, I would expect the police tried to interview him about it. I would suspect the police tried to interview family members or friends. You know, it doesn't sound and it sounds like it was a kind of a neighborhood thing, right? So I think there's more than one person who knows who the suspected perpetrator is.
Attorney Bill Bloss, I want to thank you for always making the time to talk about these types of cases, especially when it's, you know, something that is really on the minds of a lot of our WICC listeners. Thank you so much for always sharing insight with us here on the show, and we appreciate your time.
Anytime, Melissa.
All right. And again, Attorney Bill Bloss is our legal expert on the show, but he has no connection to the Renee Freer case, but just giving perspective on really just how complicated this is, and it's certainly not the ending I think anybody wanted in the Renee Freer case. But again, I will be curious to see if something leaks. There's just so much attention, especially in the town of Monroe. There's so much attention on this. We'll keep you posted, obviously. But again, legally, we are not ever supposed to really know at this point who is suspected of being the killer of Renee Freer.